let's wait till the... What was it Lily Tomlin used to say? And a gracious good morning to you? Is that what she used to say? You remember that, Tim?
Yep. That, I believe that is it.
And a gracious good morning to you. Is this the party to whom I'm speaking? Oh, goodness. Well, anyway, this is North Shore Sports Night. Welcome on this Monday night. We do it most Monday nights, Tim and I do. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. And, of course, Bill Newell anchoring all things sports-wise and news-wise for MSO this evening, putting together tomorrow's North Shore Salem News Sports Writers podcast, of which you will be very interested. It's going to be dropping at around 8 a.m. He has several great interviews up there today with the Endicott football coach, along with St. John's Prep football coach, and also other things he's working on as well, including the player of the week this week from last week's football games. And Tim, I have to tell you, I don't know if you heard the interview today with Brian St. Pierre of St. John's Prep, and pardon my cold and my hacking tonight. You're gonna have to forgive me for that. But Bill was asking Brian about the Patriots quarterback quandary right now. And, Brian, as a former NFL quarterback with the Atlanta Falcons, he got into some really cool information and a great viewpoint. But one of the things he said we'd all like, now he's 6'4", but he said we'd all like to be like Josh Allen, who's 6'5". And then he said he can throw a football through a car wash and the ball won't get wet. So, I cracked up when I heard that. But he gave good credit to the kid yesterday, the third stringer, Zappy. So, but he talked about his kids as well, and St. John's Prep, of course, on a roll. They beat the number two team in Rhode Island, the number two ranked team in Rhode Island, rather handily over the weekend. We saw some interesting games over the weekend. You and I were in Gloucester, Tim. We saw Salem kind of dominate, leading 20-0, and then Gloucester came back, and then Salem iced it away. And then you saw a pretty good game on Saturday with Masconomet and Beverly, and we're going to be talking with the Masconomet football coach coming up here.
Yeah, I got there at halftime. It was 14-7 Masco, and Beverly had just scored going into the half, and they kept that momentum going into the third quarter. The third quarter was one of the most entertaining quarters of football I've seen this year.
Mm-hmm. I saw some of it the fourth quarter on the video feed, and in a few minutes, we'll also be talking with Kyle Gaudet, who is the Newburyport Daily News sports editor. And Kyle will bring us up to date, I hope, on things that are going on in the Cape Ann League up there. Newburyport, of course, taking the lead in so many sports. And football is kind of up for grabs right now, except that Amesbury is unbeaten. The Amesbury football team is 3-0. I don't believe they have a mascot at this point. I think they're just still Amesbury High School. And Triton gave them a run for the money, as Triton football has been renewed up there under Eric Burgo. So we'll talk with Kyle in just a couple of seconds here. And, Tim, anything catch your eye before we take our first break?
Well, everybody made fun of the as they usually do with Bill Belichick draft choices. But, the left guard looks like a keeper, and the third-string quarterback proved himself probably more of a second-string quarterback than anything else right now, as he stepped in admirably.
Mm-hmm.
And they just have to do something with Isaiah Wynn, which is maybe show him the door, because he has been a revolving door for defensive ends all season long.
Yeah, all good points. I agree on all those things. Okay, we're going to take a break and come back with Kyle Gaudet if all good things happen here. This is North Shore Sports Night on MSO News Sports. We'll be right back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
MSONewsSports.com is connecting you to the North Shore. A real local news and sports podcast giving you updates from around Essex County. Spotlight feature interviews with area newsmakers. The North Shore Today Post features community updates and local photos and useful links. This is the place to hear and see positive local coverage, making the connections that support the North Shore community.
All right, Kyle Gaudette joins us now from the Newburyport Daily News. He's the sports editor up there. And, Kyle, welcome back.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Good to be back.
It is indeed. And, you know, I want to start with Amesbury, excuse me, Amesbury and Triton football, because Amesbury off to a great start. Triton, a surprisingly good start as well, from what I understand. And maybe you could talk a little bit about football in the Cape Ann League.
Oh yeah, for sure. That was a wild night up there in Amesbury. Was it ended up being like 35-28? I forget the final score.
I think it was 40-35.
Yeah, 40-35. Yeah, it's just like nobody could stop the other team. And yeah, I sort of knew coming in. I mean, Amesbury's going to be really good, defending Cal champs, and they brought a lot of talent back. I think sort of the question I had was sort of their line play, you know, O-line, D-line, how good it was going to be, because I know they graduated a couple guys, but, you know, they really got a really solid two units there on that O-line, D-line, and I mean, they just run the ball down your throat all game. They're going to be really good, but, you know, Triton, same deal, brought a lot of guys back, you know, the QB, Max Hiramataro, is a two-year starter, so definitely two very good teams, and yeah, they put on a show Friday night. That was a fun game.
Yeah, and what about excuse me, the rest of the league? Because Newburyport, I think they're at 500. Hamilton, one of them, I don't want to say they're struggling, but they're up and down. So how do you see the rest of the league?
So I think in the Baker, you know, Amesbury is definitely the class of that league or that division.
Mm-hmm.
And the Kinney, I mean, North Reading is very good.
Oh yeah. Yep.
Same thing as Amesbury last year, but they, I think, you know, their quarterback, Carucci, I think might be his last name, but he was like the player, you know, of the year last year, and he's back. And I know their running back was insane last year, and he was only a sophomore. So he's back for, his junior year. So I think, North Ring and Amesbury, I want to say they play each other in 2 weeks. So that's probably going to be the game of the year, because I think there's only the Cal, the only, you know, even though there's two divisions, they just named one champion.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the winner of that game might have the inside track to it. So.
All right, I'm going to switch over to soccer because that's Tim's thing. Tell us about boys and girls soccer up there.
Same thing. Newburyport boys and girls are mm-hmm. probably the cream of the crop up there too. I mean, the boys are undefeated and have only allowed one goal all year, to my knowledge. I don't think they played over the weekend. So, and they made it to like the D3 quarterfinals last year and brought a lot of guys back. I actually think Newburyport boys, their entire starting lineup, like offense, defenses, are all seniors. So it's an experienced group, and they're very good. Same thing on the girls. I think they only have one loss, but they're sort of the opposite. They have a couple really good, like hotshot freshmen who's scored a lot of goals, and then sophomore Alexis Greenblatt is her name. She has like 12 or 13 goals already through like 10 games, so she's pretty amazing. So mm-hmm. both Newburyport boys and girls soccer are going to go pretty far this year.
As they usually do. Coach Kearns, any questions or comments for Kyle?
What's a very strong soccer tradition also. What elements lead to maybe not a region, this area of the Northeast from, you know, I'm not going to say Lynn, because Lynn team generally struggle, but north of Beverly, girls are always very competitive, all the way up through Amesbury. What is it about this area that produces such good soccer, boys and girls?
I think, you know, probably a lot of it has to do with coaching as well. I think, you know, especially talking just about Newburyport, Sean, the boys coach, Blues, has been there a while. And I think same thing on the girls side with Kevin Sheridan. He's been there for quite a while now. So, I mean, you got a lot of good coaches that sort of do a lot, are very involved with the youth programs, and it's sort of just like, it's like this cycle. Even like I was at the Newburyport boys game soccer a couple of days ago, and like all the ball boys were just like, you know, the little kids, you know, the future Newburyport stars, you know, running up and down the sidelines, being the ball boys. So it's just sort of, I don't know, I think, yeah, a lot of it probably has to do with the coaching, just sort of, you know, keeping the sport sort of alive and thriving in the area.
Kyle, let's switch over to field hockey. What stood out for you so far in your coverage?
I think Triton. Triton's got a very good team this year. I mean, the entire Cal. Like, last year, there was just so many good teams in the Cal. I mean, like, four or five, maybe even six teams made runs to, like, the quarterfinals and the semifinals. And Ipswich was the champion in D4 last year, and you know, they brought a lot back. So it's like every, like, no easy games in the Cal for field hockey. But Triton is very good, and again, Newburyport as well. They got a really, really deep roster, so definitely be interesting to see between those two teams who's going to come out in, mm-hmm. in the division.
All right, what am I missing? What else? What other coverage has caught your eye so far? As we're halfway through the fall season already.
And, yeah, I got to show my golfers some love, man. Triton golf undefeated.
Okay.
It's actually pretty cool. So there's like these four core, maybe more. But there's like these core seniors on the team who their freshman year back in 2019, they went undefeated during the regular season. And so they're all, you know, they grew up through the system. They're all seniors now. And they're undefeated again so far, so 13-14-0. So they got a few more matches left, and hopefully they can pull off the sort of the bookend undefeated years, you know, freshman year and senior year, you know, not losing in the league. So. Gotta give my golfer some love, man.
Absolutely. All right, what's coming up in the paper this week?
Got some features, got some football stats coming up. On Friday night, I think we got Newburyport, Pawtucket, so looking forward to that football game. Then we got to see the Newburyport girls soccer tomorrow. They're playing Linfield, so looking forward to that one.
All right, Coach. Kyle, great talking with you again, man. Keep up the good work, and we'll see you at the next Moynihan meeting.
Yeah, appreciate it, gentlemen.
Thank you, Kyle. Take care.
Yeah, you as well.
All right, bye-bye. That's Kyle Gaudette, who is the sports editor up at the Newburyport Daily News. Great kid, Brent. Well, he's been there over a year now already, Tim, so he's a veteran now.
You're going to have gray whiskers pretty soon. Yeah.
I know. Well, it's funny. One of the things, the assignment I gave Mike Grenier this week is to come up with the Mount Rushmore of sports writers for him. Do you have anybody in particular, Tim, that was or is your favorite sports writer?
But the whole Boston Globe staff in the 1970s and 80s was just unbelievable. The Sunday sports page was must read, cover to cover for all the covers that they had, all the sport notes that the writers created. I was just amazing. But I'll go back to the very first sports that I encountered growing up as a kid in Lynn, and that was Red Hoffman.
Oh, yeah.
Brother of the infamous John Hoffman. Red was quite a character, big guy, full head of red hair, that's the nickname. But he just so used to write great stories. I still remember them. And that's such, I still remember him.
Yeah.
I really can't. Well, I know Paul Halloran wrote for the sports page and Stevie Krause. But growing up in the early 60s, late 50s, early 60s, it was Red Hoffman who captivated the local sports fans.
Well, you know, I agree on all of that again. And the Globe, that's who I was going to mention. I can give you so many names from the Globe back then. And I remember page 2 on a Sunday was one entire full page of Will McDonough football. And man, you just couldn't get enough of it. It was fantastic. All right, we'll see what Mike has to say later on. But first, we're going to take a break, and we're going to talk with Masconomen High School football coach Gavin Monagle. This is North Shore Sports Night. We'll be right back in just a second here.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
MSO NewsSports.com is connecting you to the North Shore with great local sports coverage. Live play-by-play football, Monday night sports night show, the game night football show, feature spotlight interviews with coaches and players, the Salem News Sports Writers Podcast, and joining us this fall, Nick and Nick in the North Shore Sports Desk and the Merrimack Valley Sports Desk. The place to hear and see positive local coverage, making connections that support the North Shore.
Fear was realized, and so I accidentally cut off the coach here. So let's get him back. And he's not going to be happy with me at all. Oh, try it again. All right, there we go.
Yeah, you did it again.
No, somebody pressed the wrong button in the studio here. So, I don't know what happened.
Everybody else in there, that's what I'm telling you.
You didn't have to say that. excuse me. Gavin wasn't answering at the moment, so I didn't make the proper connections. He could call back in the next few minutes or not. But I just want to take up on that, Tim. One of the sports writers today, I actually have to have a dictionary near me when I read, because at least once per column, when he does one of his columns, he's going to have some word, some phrase, some historical reference that I'm not familiar with, and it just fits in so perfectly to his writing. And that's old friend Christopher Gasper. I don't know if you've read him or not recently, Tim, but I love his stuff.
Yeah, he came to Gloucester in 2000. I think it was, and interviewed me. It was right after I took the varsity job, and he came down to the field. It was when he first started working for the Globe, and he was covering high school sports.
Yeah, and we had him on a couple of hockey games as well when he came, to the O'Malley Rink. But I love reading his stuff. It's so poetic, and it's just awesome. But I think the writers you mentioned, I mean, Lee Montville, who else went over to Sports Illustrated? There was another one of that same ilk from the...
Christine, what is your last name?
Well, there was also John Powers, as I said, Lee Montville, Will McDonough. How about Bob Ryan?
Oh, master of all.
Yeah.
I mean, you read them just to read how they were going to wax poetically. All of them had that way of taking sports coverage kind of a little bit out of the locker room and putting a little bit of polish on it and just making the words sing on the page.
Yeah, and then on the other paper was Larry Claflin and Tim Horgan. Those guys were great to read as well, and they were funny as a bozo to read.
Oh, yeah. The Globe, the Herald, the Record American, who all those guys wrote for, we were blessed in an era of just tremendously talented writers who grew up in an age where you had really unfettered access to the players. You traveled on the trains with them, and as it went to, plane flights, you sat on the plane with them, you stayed in the hotels, you drank with them, after the games, and we won't say before and during, but, they had a lot more intimate contact with the players, and the players were just telling them stuff, but there was also a degree of respect for what the players told them. If they thought it was something that was out of bounds. They didn't report it. They didn't cover it. They didn't tell that story because, you know, either the players said, please don't, or they just knew that it was none of the public's business to know it.
I missed that. And we, the writers, therefore we, the public, don't have access to, I don't know, I don't want to say intimate stories, but other stories, because it's all cookie cutter now. You go before a podium, and then all the writers get the exact same story, and that's what you read in all the papers. And,
right.
and that's all you get. You don't get any behind-the-scenes stuff, the story behind the story, who the person is, what he or she is like. And I don't know. I imagine the players are happier about that. But, you know, you listen to Mike Grenier and Gary Larrabee talking about the professionals that they wrote about, you know, one-on-one and the stories that they got. And you mentioned the word respect. It was a mutual respect. The players trusted the sports writers, and the sports writers, in turn, respected certain boundaries.
Yeah. And that was key to getting them to tell all that they did tell.
Yeah.
You know, now everybody's family business is open. You know, they go searching for stuff, and a lot of the old timers don't enjoy that stuff. I can tell I don't.
No. Well, I was having a discussion with someone, and this is totally off the rails. I can't remember who it was. It might have been you. And the name Kardashian came up. And my thing is, who? And you know, all the kids know about Kardashian, and I'm looking up who is Kardashian, and virtually I still don't know what a Kardashian. I thought it was one of those aliens in Star Trek, and which I really liked them back in Deep Space Nine, but apparently it's not, and I don't understand media today how that happens. I don't know where that comes from. And the other thing, Tim, is
The husband and father was an L.A. lawyer who happened to get on the O.J. Simpson team.
Ah, okay.
He wasn't even the primary lawyer.
Ah.
That was Johnny Cochran.
So this is basically
in the court sitting there, and his name became a bit more prominent.
Ah.
And then his wife married Bruce Jenner after he died. She married Bruce Jenner. And, you know, they're famous for absolutely nothing,
mm-hmm.
doing nothing, and they're multi-millionaires.
All right, hold on, Coach. I think this is Coach Monagle. Hold on, please. I don't know how to do this. I'll do this. Hello, Coach. Hello.
Go ahead.
Hi, Coach. You there?
I'm still here. How's it going?
Oh, I thought that was Gavin. Hold on. Coach McGonagall. Coach Monagle.
Yeah,
there we go. I'm so confused. I'm pressing buttons and messing up names. Sorry, Coach. Tim Kearns is with us. Coach Gavin Monagle of Masconomet High School is with us. Coach, this game Saturday, man, you got to tell me about it. It looked like a classic.
Yeah, very exciting game. You know, Beverly just kept coming back. We got a couple of touchdown leads a few times on them. You know, I think our offense played real well. Matty Richardson did a super job. Just running the show out there, you know, throwing the ball, running the ball, getting the ball to the guys who they needed to get to. He did great. Sammy Nadler, and he had 3 touchdowns, run, you know, catching the ball, receiving. Really had a good breakout game for him. And Will Shannon ran the ball, I think 180 yards, something like that, on top. So we had a real good balance, I thought. But Beverly just kept coming back. You know, we're up 2 touchdowns with like 50 seconds to go, but then, you know, we're up 1 touchdown with like, you know, 12 seconds to go, and they're on our yard line. So they never quit. They just kept coming back and coming back, and, you know, our kids, you know, hung tough there at the end, and, you know, we ended up coming up with a big play at the end of the game.
Tim?
Who?
Tim, are you there? I must have lost him. Tim Kearns. Oh, boy. My bad. All right, well, anyway, I'll get back to him.
Will Mitchell came up with a big interception.
Yeah, I was looking at the stats, and your quarterback, as you mentioned, 206 yards, 3 touchdowns. Tell me about the offense, Gavin, as to how you worked it, because you mixed in the running plays along with the passing plays with Shannon almost 200 yards.
Yeah, I mean, we're a wing team, and we expand out. You know, when teams really try to crowd the line, we have the ability to... Yeah, we have some pretty good skill guys there. Noah Barrett had a bunch of catches too as well. So all the skill guys stepped up and, you know, really did well. And I think our line protected Matt real well and opened up some holes there also for Will. So it was just good balance, I think. You know, some days are better than others, you know.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? Well, as you,
so,
as,
you know, you take it, run, and go from, you know, try to get better.
As we approach midseason here, Coach, what are some of the things that you're pleased with and what do you still want to work on?
Well, we just got to keep working on fundamentals. We really do. I mean, first of all, I'm really happy with everyone's effort. Kids have been great all year. You know, started off a little slow there and, you know, we, just trying to find ourselves a little bit, a little of identity, you know, just, we graduated a good group of kids last year and every year it's new, you know, mm-hmm. Looks like it's the same, but it's not necessarily, you know. And, I think the kids just kept hanging in there, you know, started off losing the first two. It's a couple of good teams, but, still losing stinks.
Yep.
But the kids handled it well. Just coming back to practice, kept working on the fundamentals. We still got to get better at that, though. We really do. You know, blocking and tackling and, you know, it comes down to that. You know, it really does. So, but we do have some talent, though. You know, we have some talent
when you,
being games, you know.
When you look at the Peabody Marblehead game, and you've got to go into Piper this week, I guess. Do you get anything from that the kids can work on, or is it just again you got to do what you got to do?
Yeah, it's more about us, you know. And that's what we're trying to explain to the kids, you know, going to Beverly too. You know, today it's more that Peabody's real good. It's not that Beverly's bad at all. Peabody's real good, and I think people really want attention too. It's not the win over Marblehead. And, so, you know, it's just worry about ourselves and just get better each week and, you know, what we can look to improve upon from last week. You know, there's plenty to improve upon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there really is. But, you know, special teams wasn't great for us. And, you know, I wish we tackled a little bit better. And I give Beverly a lot of credit for a lot of that, too, though, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is mostly about us. I know Bible has, you know, there's no one doubt in anyone's mind that they're going to be ready to go mm-hmm. on Friday, you know, get their very best, I'm sure. No question about it. They got a great program.
Yeah.
They got a character program. They're not going to, you know, lay down. That's for sure.
And it looks like the division is up for grabs, too. So anything else you want to mention about this week's game, Coach?
No, just really happy about, you know, being in the situation, playing a big game this time of year is always good. And, you know, winning, you know, the NEC, any game, time you can win, you're pretty happy about it. And, you know, we've got one under our belt there.
Yeah. Yep, you're 1-0.
Let's take it now and see what, you know, see what happens next week, you know.
All right, so let me
appreciate
see.
Appreciate everything. Yeah, thanks a lot.
Oh, no, our pleasure, Gavin, and we'll talk to you later. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank bye-bye. You, Coach. All right, bye-bye. That is Gavin Monagle, Masconomic Coach. They are at Marblehead at 6:30. Hello, Tim.
Yes, I've been sitting here.
Yeah, I know. Again, somebody pressed the wrong button. We're going to take a break, and God, I'm going to try to keep you on the line here, and we'll come back with Gary Larrabee in just a second. You're listening to North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore. That's a very angry Tim Kearns, and I don't blame him. And Bill Proposky is engineering for us. We'll be right back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back, and Tim Kearns, of course, hanging on for me. I appreciate it. We're with Gary Larrabee now, sports historian, golf writer, and again, I'm going to stay out of this a little bit here and turn my mic down with my coughing. But, Gary, we're into October now, so where do we start?
Well, I think we have to remember that to pull out the woolen caps and maybe a scarf or two and maybe some golf winter gloves.
Oh, come on, it was in the 50s today, Gary. It's not that cold.
No, well, I was out there watching the Avidia Cup final tournament of 18 holes over at Salem Country Club, and I thought it was the middle of December.
Me too. I'm with you, Gary.
But they played. The full field played, and two players broke par, and Rich Berberian from Vesco won the tournament with a 2-under par 70. He was joined in his group by Kirk Hannafeldt from Salem, who shot 76, and Sean Warren from Falmouth, Maine, who shot 74. That was the big news, I guess, of today. Those guys can play in all kinds of weather and make it look easy. It was just fun to be out there watching them, even though I was shivering. I wasn't wearing golf shorts, Tim. I was wearing five layers and a scarf and a turtleneck and a hoodie. But it was some great golf, and I'm glad we got it in. No snow flurries. And it was a fun day to be out there to watch these guys handle some very unique conditions.
You sounded like Rick the way you were laying up there.
Well, this was mild. To talk about this tournament is mild compared with what we saw Patrick Reed do last week. What did you think of Patrick Reed suing Brando Chamblee and the Golf Channel and Comcast and half of the people who talk and report for the Golf Channel? Patrick Reed came out with both guns blazing last week.
Yeah, I did not see anything about that, Gary, to be honest with you.
Well, I'll fill you in very briefly, as well as our listeners, the fact that Patrick Reed, one of the really true outlaws on the PGA Tour, has jumped to the LIV Tour. But at the same time, you know, he's been accused of cheating as a collegian. He's been accused of cheating as a PGA pro, a terrific player. He won the Masters, if you remember. One year, his wife used to caddy for him, very controversial. They always complain. And I know that the PGA Tour and Jay Monahan, the commissioner, is thrilled in particular that Patrick Reed has taken his bizarre level of behavior and his terrible attitude, despite the fact he's a fine player, and taking all that stuff to the LIV Tour. But he's suing the Comcast and the Golf Channel and Chamblee for some astronomical amount of money. I don't know what he's going to get from it, if anything. I don't think he'll get much of anything. But that was one interesting development from last week. We should also mention, guys, that Jay Monahan, the commissioner, did state unequivocally last week, again, that Rick, there's no real plans to even get into any kind of discussions with the LIV Tour about maybe coming to some kind of a agreement or middle road peace agreement. I think things are going to continue in a very nasty way, Tim, particularly after what Jay Monahan said last week.
Yeah, you know, I think he speaks from believing that the PGA has a position of strength. A long-established tour where the majority of the guys play, and the guys there, you know, you can sell the fact that these guys come out every week, they earn their way onto the tour, and they go out there, they compete against each other to win the prizes that they do. They haven't signed off over on the LIV Tour, basically. You know, they prostituted themselves to get paid big money up front to go and play for the Saudis.
Yeah, I think that's the way it's going to stand, I think, just the way things are right now. It's probably the way it's going to stand for at least another year, maybe longer, unless LIV continues to succeed in raiding the PGA Tour. We all know, guys, that the number one job that Jay Monahan has as the commissioner of the PGA Tour is to keep the sponsors happy. He has already succeeded in keeping the several networks who broadcast PGA Tour events happy. Because I believe, Tim, that the new contracts are in place for 5 years, 7 years, whatever it is. So the PGA Tour is in great shape there. We know the LIV Tour is trying to put some kind of a TV contract together, maybe with Fox. But it's a waiting game right now, but we'll be interested to see who throws the next punch.
Yeah, you know, just looking at a news article,
you know, the tour's top players have committed to play in 20 events starting next year on the PGA Tour. Now, if you get that going down the line, you know, that really puts you in a position of strength.
You think so, and of course that's a little bit of a mimicking of what the LIV Tour has already done, and
yeah.
Greg Norman said there's nothing like, this is the sincerest form of flattery to copy a little bit about the concepts that they're using, that the PGA Tour will be using in 2023. We'll see how it all shakes down. What did you think of the winners this week, Tim? On the tours, we had the H winners. Mackenzie Hughes wins on the PGA Tour, and Englishwoman Charlie Hull won on the LPGA Tour.
Is there such betting in the golf world where you could bet that people with the same letter starting their last names win on the same weekend? Are there little pushes like that throughout the golfing world?
I was just trying to be a wise guy for a minute, but it was Hughes and Hull. win, and Charlie Hull's been a rising star for many years. She's also a beauty out there on the tour, and she doesn't mind showing a little bit of sex appeal, even though she has been married in recent years. But she is someone that the LPGA Tour needs to become a star, I think, to improve the LPGA's reach into Europe, and particularly into Great Britain. And anyone, I think, of an English stature or American stature would give the LPGA Tour, I think, a big boost over here. Which leads me to the next point, which I think that the USGA and Salem Country Club have not actually begun discussions yet, but I think from another source I got over the weekend, and it looks like that Salem wants another USGA championship. It would be their seventh. It's going to have to be a U.S. Women's Open, as they had in 54 and how they had in 84. That may be the only way they can do it.
Every 30 years, 40 years, I guess it would be. Gary, let me ask you a question before you get to your final topic here. If the LIV Tour were not associated with the Saudis, or if the Saudis were not associated with 9/11, would there be this big brouhaha?
That's a very good question. I think the answer is no, there wouldn't be a big brouhaha. There might still be a little bit of an issue about the nerve of a new organization challenging the PGA Tour.
Yep.
When you challenge the PGA Tour, Rick, you're also challenging the DP World Tour, which is the European Tour, the new name.
Mm-hmm.
Because DP is a company, I think in the United Arab Emirates. I'm not sure, but it's over there somewhere, not too far from Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
Very good point, Rick. Very good point.
Wow, I got one.
All right. What aggravates a lot of people, Gary, and I don't really raise my hackles a bit, was all this big money they were throwing at these guys to entice them to come over there and join the league. You know, $200 million here, $180 million here, $150 million here, just to say, yeah, I'll play in your league. And then you go out and you play in the tournaments and you win a little bit more money. But it was that upfront money where they were buying these players. And it really scratched a lot of people the wrong way.
Well, the fact remains, where does it say in the U.S. Constitution or any place else in the free world, as we discuss the free world these days, that says they can't do it? Is there any law that says they can't do it this way, Tim?
No, but I think we're a society that, you know, we hold on to our traditional values, and and golfers, no matter how much money they've made, you know, every week Jack would go out, and if he didn't make the cut, he didn't get to play on the last day. And if he won the tournament, he did so because he stayed all week and he won that purse. You know? And I think Americans look at golf like that. It's an individual struggle to come and compete against guys of similar skill levels and competing against them to win the championship or finish as high as you can to increase your monetary stake. And you got to do this week in, week out. And it's like these guys that have jumped ship. You know, they've benefited by this in the PGA Tour. And now suddenly it's like, well, if I don't feel like playing, I'm still guaranteed all this money because I joined this league.
Well, they're doing it differently, that's for sure. But the way I look at it, guys, is the bottom line is this. People who love golf love to watch it on TV. They love to watch it in person. They don't care so much about what money is involved. They do care when it's different, when it's the four major championships or the Tournament Players Championship maybe. But people just want to watch the ball fly in the air by the best players in the world. And I don't think most people care if they're watching the LIV Tour or the PGA Tour, except for the, you know, we can make an exception for the four so-called majors. But I think that's the bottom line, Tim. If the LIV Tour and the PGA Tour can find the sponsors, can find the TV networks, let them coexist, let them both do their thing, and I want to watch as much golf as I can on my beautiful 67-foot wide TV channel.
You know, one thing that turns me off if I'm listening to sports or watching sports, it absolutely turns me off, is when the sportscasters start talking about contracts. And I think maybe to argue against him, once they start talking, I don't care. The money is ridiculous anyway. It doesn't affect me. I have to pay for my cable TV, but I'm not going to spend $1,000 on a Red Sox game. So I just want to watch the event. And when they start talking about, you know, contracts and the organizations, I don't want to hear it. Now, what else you got, Gary? We're moving along here.
I think we're just about to wrap up, Rick. I will make note of the fact that my final column in the Salem News should be appearing this week, and it's a very shameless plug for my kid brother, Mark, who's finishing a career after 37 years as a PGA professional, and he's saying goodbye to the profession at the end of November up at Eastman Golf Links, where he's been up in Grantham, New Hampshire for the last 15 years, not far from Lake Sunapee, not far from Dartmouth College. And he's going to be saying goodbye, so I'm going to give him a little bit of a shameless plug this week in my final column.
Love it, love it. Sounds good. All right, Gary, we'll be back next week, won't we?
Why not?
Okay, sounds good. Well, the final call makes me, I know it's the end of the season. All right, Gary, I appreciate all that you bring to us and everything else. Be well this week. We'll talk next week.
You as well, guys. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Gary.
Well.
Take care. Whew, all right. Okay, where are we? All right, Mike Renier is next. Tim Kearns is with us. I'm Rick Moore. Bill Newell putting everything together for us back in Central. And we'll take another break and come back with Mike, I hope. So wish me luck. Yeah, really.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back. Mike Renier and Tim Kearns on the line here. I'm Rick Moore. Mike, of course, another great sports writer with the Salem News, among others. And Mike, more Celtic news this week, so bring us up to date.
Blake Griffin,
right?
Here we go, Blake Griffin. Of course, there was a lot of talk, as we know, Rick, a couple weeks ago we mentioned that we didn't want Carmelo Anthony. Unfortunately, he's not coming to the Celtic. Unfortunately, I say that. Tim, I don't know if you agree. With Blake Griffin, you got a guy who's averaged basically 20 points a game in his career. He's 33 years old. He's 6'9". Last year with the Nets, that was his first season where he averaged below 10 points a game. Even as recently as 3 years ago, he was hitting on all cylinders and averaging like 22 points a game. That was like 3 years ago. So the hope, obviously, is that he still has something in the tank and a veteran presence on that team, a guy who won't be disruptive and who will just kind of be happy to be a team-oriented player. That's what we're hoping for. So it's not a bad signing. It's worth the risk. You know, he's at the height of his ability. Rick, we might remember he was a slam dunk participant, and he jumped over a car or something. Remember some crazy thing? He actually jumped over a car, right, Tim? Yeah, he jumped over a car and he dunked the ball, and that was he was a phenomenally athletic kid coming out of the University of Oklahoma. So it's certainly not a bad move by the Celtics. It's not going to cost them a lot, I don't think, and he could add something to the mix.
Well,
I agree with him. I still remember seeing him do that, and then of course the flood of pictures that came afterwards. He's never been a troublemaker. He's never been a big mouth that I can recall.
Right.
He had some unfortunate injuries.
Yeah.
That's probably because of the intensity which he plays now. And of course, some of these guys get themselves in such freaky shape that they break down a whole lot easier than guys we grew up with watching going, 100 miles an hour, but they never seem to break down. Because
right.
there was always a looseness in their muscles, and I remember the first athlete, just to go off the side, I remember the first athlete who used to break down every single year with muscle was Reggie Jackson.
Sure. Oh, God, yes. He was kind of muscle-bound at times.
Oh,
yes, he had
the biggest, thighs, and he'd always pull muscle because he was so friggin' tight
that...
Because when he snapped into a sprint, he popped a muscle.
When I look at Blake Griffin, Tim, he's 33 years old, which means he's actually 3 years younger than Al Horford, who's going to be a big cog in the Celtics machine. So it's worth the risk because he could still give you some scoring, Blake Griffin. So, I could see him coming in and playing a power forward when Horford needs a blow, which at age 36, going on 37, at some point this season he'll be 37, I can see him filling in some minutes for Horford or maybe even the Robert Williams minutes that we're going to miss early in the season because he's recovering from surgery. So he's still a capable scorer, Blake Griffin. He developed a three-point shot later in his career. But he used to play a lot inside, and he was muscular and strong at 6'9", and that's why at the peak of his career he was averaging sort of like what our two big guns, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, averaged. He was up around 25 points a game at the height of his career. Yeah.
No one's expecting him to do that, and he doesn't have to jump over cars on the parquet floor. So he should, on the face of things, I think he's going to be a good addition.
So what do you make of the first exhibition game?
They looked great. I mean, obviously, they won by what? They won by like 40 points.
40-something, yeah.
And 134-93. And, the new coach, Joe Mazzulla, like all coaches during the preseason, he used 14 players. So we got a pretty good look at Brogdon. And how could we not be impressed with the guy that they traded for? He's going to be the big guy off the bench. Malcolm Brogdon scored like 9 or 10 points. He had 9 assists in like 24 minutes. And he was really looking to pass and move the ball, Tim. That's what impressed me, that he was moving the ball from side to side. And he also showed great court vision. He sort of played that Marcus Smart role where he looks to pass the ball. And he's certainly a capable scorer. We know that. So I thought he had a great opening game in a Celtics uniform, Brogdon.
Yeah, I think that's probably been the word from the coach.
Yeah.
That,
you know, in this exhibition period, you know, maybe he's going to keep it wide open. He's going to, you know, put the pedal to the metal and challenge these guys. Let's just run people off the floor. Keep it wide. Keep it space. Keep cutting through. Keep looking for the ball. You know, put your hands up and you'll get a pass. And, you know, you'll run a lot of the teams in the league off the floor every night if you can do that. Otherwise, you're going to have to maybe clamp it down a little bit. But get these guys going early. Get them in the mindset that, you know, this season it's going to be about sprinting and not lollygagging.
Oh, I agree. What I like about Brogdon is that, let's say the new coach decides to put him in, let's say, midway through the first quarter or 8 or 9 minutes into the first quarter when guys are getting tired, and he leads the second unit with, let's say, Derek White in there and Grant Williams in there, guys who can really run. I could see them, like the old Celtics, but Rick, we know that what Auerbach used to do was he used to put in Havlicek as a sixth man, and he would run some quickness and some fast breaks with that second unit. And I think, hopefully, Mazzulla, being a young coach, hopefully he'll learn from what the old Celtics did and run Brogdon as the point guard and have a fast-breaking type game. So, you know, it remains to be seen. However, it looks promising in that regard, and Blake Griffin could be a part of that. Grant Williams could be part of that second unit. And, Rick, we shouldn't go much further without talking about Jaylen Brown because he had like 24 points in 22 minutes last night. He was by far the best player on the floor. Easily the best player on the floor.
And he can be in just about any game he's in.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And, then, you know,
he shot lights out. I mean, let me see here. I think he was like 9 for 13 or 9 for 12 or something like that. And, had a great game, and, you know, Tatum, you know, played about 22 minutes, and he had 16 points, but Jaylen Brown was 8 for 11 from the floor, and 3 for 5 on threes, and in just 24 minutes, 24 points. Wow. So you want your stars to play in that range of minutes in these four preseason games, no more than 23 or 24 minutes.
Right.
You don't want to overdo it with the starting unit here.
Next week we'll look at strategy, I think. Although next week's a holiday, so we may have to do it the week after.
Right.
But I gave you a homework assignment, and I don't know if you were listening earlier on. Tim and I were talking about our Mount Rushmore sports writers, and we're in complete agreement. It's the late 80s, from 70s to the 90s, almost the entire Boston Globe sports staff.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Now, who did Gary Larrabee pick?
I didn't ask Gary that homework assignment.
Okay. All right. Now, I'm going to, you know, you're right about that. The Globe had such a versatile staff. They had experts in every type of sport, including, like, things like, obviously, like the Boston Marathon. And like, you mentioned John Ahern a few times and how much he helped you, Rick, over the years. But my favorite, and, of course, Shaughnessy came aboard, and he did not only the Red Sox beat, but he did the Celtics beat when Larry Bird was there. But the guy who, when I was a young writer, who I looked up to, and he was just a few years older, is Bob Ryan. How could I not mention Bob Ryan as in that Mount Rushmore? Because to me, he came from New Jersey, as I recall. So he probably grew up being a Knicks fan or a New York Yankees fan or whatever. But when he came to Boston and he got that Celtics beat in the early 1970s, no one did it better. I mean, he wrote the day-to-day stories, the game stories. He wrote columns. He wrote features. He wrote long pieces. And he knew the NBA. That's why he got that nickname, the Commissioner. And he's people to this day say he's retired. And I've seen Bob Ryan at Celtics games as recently as last season. And people still come up to me, hey, Commish, how you doing, Commissioner? Because he knew so much about the league, and Ryan was kind of a brash, outspoken guy when he was young, but he really knew the league inside and out, and he knew the Celtics even better because he was with them on a daily basis. To me, it was hard to top him across the nation, and I got to know so many of the writers from the New York area. I'd meet guys who cover the Knicks and the Nets, and, of course, guys who covered the Philadelphia 76ers, Rick, and you're so familiar with Philly. He had some really great talent across the country, but to me, Bob Ryan writing about the Celtics, that was top-notch.
Yep. Tim?
Ryan was, I mean, every one of those guys, you look forward to every one of those guys opinion columns appearing in the Globe. And then, of course, on Sunday, you had the baseball, the hockey, the basketball, the football notes.
Yeah.
That those guys called around the country and gathered and presented them. They each had a full page to do it on. And that was like required reading. You got a cup of coffee and you got comfortable because you just didn't get out of the sports page for a couple of hours.
No, you're absolutely right, Tim. And you get me excited just mentioning that because you're absolutely right. You got that Sunday Globe and you had Peter Gammons was the pioneer of the baseball notebook. And I think then it was copied by newspapers across the country. But Gammons would do the whole thing where he'd call different teams, whether it be the Seattle Mariners or the San Francisco Giants or whatever, the Dodgers. He had notes about important players on various teams. He started that. And, of course, Ryan had his own set of notes on a Sunday on basketball. And then you have, of course, Will McDonough, legendary NFL guy. He had his notes column on Sundays. And, you know, Kevin Paul DuPont would do the hockey. So you had your major sports covered extremely well in the pre-internet days.
You know what I like, Mike, was and Tim, was the knowledge, because as you said, they had they talk with players, they talk with coaches across the country, the deep knowledge, unlike what you hear on local radio today, and in fact, unlike what you see in some of the papers. Some of the papers, it's very superficial.
Yeah.
And I just wonder a question I had. Do you think Jackie McMullen was influenced by Ryan because she's another spectacular writer?
Yeah, of course, Jackie being young, I know her extremely well. Phenomenal person. She got to know she certainly grasped the NBA scene. I believe she's in the NBA Hall of Fame in some category because she did her job so well. She was a young girl. I remember when she was like in her early 20s coming to the Garden, and she had played basketball at UNH, I believe. And she grasped that scene very quickly, very early, a lot of confidence. She wanted to be a great writer and a great reporter. And she certainly, I think, definitely was influenced by Bob Ryan. No question in my mind. Ryan was several years her senior, but definitely that's the type of writing she wanted to do. And she wanted to have that deep knowledge of the league right into the NBA office. With David Stern and all that. She understood basketball and the NBA as well as anybody in the nation. And of course, she would end up on the ESPN doing the NBA shows and all that stuff because of her deep knowledge, Rick. So, yeah. That's a great name to bring up. And to this day, when I see her, she gives you a hug. And we reminisce about covering those great Celtics teams in the 1980s because she was right there for that.
I still want to meet her, Mike, someday. I still want to meet her.
She's just fantastic. Yeah, she's a fantastic person.
Christine, oh God, I just had her name and I lost it. Christine. Help me out, Michael.
Christine, for what sport or what paper?
The Globe.
The Globe?
She was the first one to go to ESPN.
Yeah. That escapes me at the moment, Tim, but we'll both recall it after we're off the air.
Yeah, of course.
Christine Brennan.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure she wrote for the Globe. Like all these great writers come from the Globe, and they all end up on national sports.
Yeah. I don't recall it right now, but you know, certainly the Globe had a wide variety of people who really were great at what they did, and they were versatile. They could. I know, for example, Dan Shaughnessy went from covering baseball to the Celtics for a few years and then back to baseball, whereas Ryan did the Celtics and then they wanted him to cover baseball for a while, so they switched things up. So there was a lot of versatility in that staff, and Jackie McMullen certainly was a huge part of that Globe staff in the heyday of the Celtics and in the heyday of newspapers.
Yeah, it was great writing, and I remember reading the Herald and the Record American, those sports writers too. I think it was Tim Horgan and Larry Claflin.
Larry Claflin. I'm glad you mentioned Horgan, Rick, because when I was just a 21 or 22-year-old kid, and almost like, you had nerves going into the Garden because you weren't sure what the process was, and you didn't know if you were going to get nervous talking to coaches and athletes or meeting an imposing figure like Red Auerbach. And Tim Horgan, I would go to early on and say, Tim, how do we do this? How does this business work? And he was so kind in terms of encouraging a young reporter like myself. Tim Horgan was a tremendous columnist in his own right, and just a great person to talk to when you were a young writer. So I'm glad you mentioned his name, Rick.
Oh, that's great. Well, I don't know if we're on next week because I believe it's Columbus Day or Indigenous...
Oh, no, Indigenous People's Day.
I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. Columbus makes a mistake and he's a hero for 500. But anyway, we won't go there. Tim and I, we discuss this quite often. But we'll catch up in a couple of weeks. And I want you to keep your eye on strategy because that's one thing I'm curious about as to who will be helping out Coach Mazzulla with that.
You're right. You're right. And I think that's probably a move that Brad Stevens is still contemplating, whether they get an experienced, older coach to be right next to Mazzulla once the season starts.
Mm-hmm. All right. Be well, Mike. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, guys. It's great. That's a great homework question we did, Rick.
Okay. I'll come up with some more. Take care, Mike.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Tim.
Oh, that was fun. I love reading about those guys. Oh, my goodness gracious. I still want to meet Jackie McMullen, Coach. I want to meet her. And just shake her hand because I think she's so spectacular, a writer and a sportscaster, all of the above.
Yeah, she really is. You know, every time the documentary, the 86 Celtics, is on, she is just so good in it.
Yep.
Because she just speaks from such a perspective of having been around the Celtics for a long time, you know.
Yeah, and it's usually a positive look, no matter what, and I like that. But it was fun, very good. Well, let's see what happens this week. I don't who are the Patriots playing this coming week. I don't even know. You don't either. Okay. Okay. Well, we'll figure it out.
Again.
What's that?
I think that they're home again. Hang on.
Yeah, they should be home.
Detroit Lions.
All right, very good.
Back on Sunday.
Okay. All right, Coach. Talk to you later. We'll see what our assignments are this weekend because I don't know. We're not going to be doing a live game of the week, but we'll be covering a lot of high school football.
All righty, Rick.
All right, Tim. Thank you so much. Talk to you later.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye. That is Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and, of course, Bill Newell, anchoring all things back at MSO. He'll have our Player of the Week coming up later in the week, Harrington Trophy plaque being presented to our Player of the Week from this past weekend's football games. And, of course, the Salem News Sports Writers podcast will be dropping tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., primarily on high school football, but they also cover field hockey and some other stuff as well. So you'll want to check in on that. Some great interviews up there today, including St. John's Prep football coach Brian St. Pierre, and, of course, the Endicott College football program, interview up there about that, all kinds of good stuff. So check us out from time to time, if you will. So on behalf of Tim and Bill, I'm Rick Moore. Be well.